Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to continue our exploration of the Sun's upcoming conjunction with Saturn in the sign of Pisces, which is a death and rebirth moment for Saturn. And today I want to explore some of the archetypal significations of Saturn that have to do with death and that have to do with the dying process, you might say, of an old Saturn, a Saturn that is preparing for a rebirth in this conjunction with the Sun. So we're going to look at what things, three things that dying Saturn has to say that we might pay attention to. Now, today is a little deeper archetypal focus on Saturn. So if you want a broader picture of what's going on, take a look at the video I did yesterday, where we look at the Sun-Saturn conjunction from the standpoint of the whole sign horoscopes. You can get maybe more general or topical information that way. Today is a bit of an exploration, an archetypal exploration, I should say. So anyway, that is our goal for today. I cannot believe, by the way, in the past week, how many creative descriptions of pressing or tapping the like button have come in. I'll never be the same person. That's basically, that is basically what has happened thanks to you guys. I have seen people pirouetting on the like button. I think there was a lot of stroking. it got a little PG-13 to rated R with some of you guys. But anyways, if you would lovingly tap, press, click, smash, stomp the like button, that is much appreciated. And subscribe if you're new to the channel. It's great to have you here. Share your comments and reflections. We love to hear from you guys. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks, including today's, on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Now, I want to take you over there because we have the next webinar coming up, which you may want to know about. So you go to nightlightastrology.com, click on the live events tab there, or go up to events on the drop-down menu and click live events, either way. And you will see that our next monthly webinar, which is March 14th, is on Neptune in love. So we started off the series looking at Pluto in love. Next up, we will be looking at Neptune's significations when it comes to love, marriage, sex, relationships, both in the way that it shows up in your birth chart, potentially, as well as by transits to planets in the birth chart. We're going to talk about what Neptune is doing, how to notice Neptune, how to work with Neptune, how to not get blown over by the outer planets in love. So like what to avoid. And also, like, what is Neptune really like? What is Neptune trying to teach us? How is Neptune trying to transform and heal us through the significations that are involved with love and relationships? So anyway, you can check that out. It's $20 to attend if you want. You could even sign up for April's on Uranus. It's $20 to attend. If you cannot make it live afterward, everyone who registers is also sent a download link so that you can download and watch the recording on your own time. So yeah, it's 7 to 9 p.m. March 14th. I hope to see some of you there. All right, let's bring up the real-time clock now, and we are going to take a look at this synodic reset again today. So the synodic reset. Here we are, and now on Thursday, February 22nd, we can see that the two are about 6 degrees away. So let's fast forward this. Especially when they get to within about 3 degrees of each other, which is Sunday, February 25th. That's when things really start cooking. And then you're going to notice the conjunction. Now, one thing I want to throw in here, which we will be coming back to again next week, is the fact that this is a triple conjunction with Mercury, who's debilitated. They're all Kazemi. So the reset moment is very powerful with Mercury also involved. Today, we're just looking at Saturn again, but we'll be throwing that back in next week. So their synodic moment of reset, the actual rebirthing moment, happens on February 28th. That's middle of next week. But this is the long, slow burn. So I really want people out. We want to get out in front of this one on an archetypal level. You can see that the separation then happens within 3 degrees by about Sunday, March 3rd. And then if you give it 15 degrees, which is about the average space in which you'll see 15 degrees of separation when a planet is just about to appear. So you get to about the middle of March and Saturn would be coming up very early as a morning star. So anyway, and then by that time, we're getting close to getting closer to Mercury's retrograde in April in Aries, and eclipse season is upon us, and all the fun stuff starts happening. So All right. Well, there is a way of looking at the synodic cycle between Saturn and the Sun that astrologers have been using for thousands of years. It has to do with its death and rebirth. When the Sun is this close to conjoining Saturn, Saturn is an old Saturn. And so it's thought of as all significations related to Saturn right now have a little extra emphasis on death and dying. Of course, just like the death card in the tarot, you can think of it as metaphorical, as suggestive, as symbolic. It does not have to be literal. But the death and dying piece is important because Saturn's death and dying is very different than Pluto's. It's very different than Uranus. If you describe Uranus's death and dying, it's more like getting electrocuted. If you describe Neptune's, it's like being on a funeral pyre. So they're called funeral pyre and burning in flames while being shipped out into the ocean. If you describe Pluto's, it might be a little bit more like the slow descent into the grave, being lowered down in a casket. So so many planets, there's no planet that like rules death, right? There's so many different planets that have significations related to death. Even Jupiter, did you know? Maybe we'll talk about that in a separate video. But when it comes to Saturn, you really are getting the idea of age and time and deterioration and winter and old age and things that have reached their expiration date, which means they have history behind them. There's consequence and process. These are all metaphors. Don't take them literally, but sometimes they really do have like literal history. But so it's important that when we have this moment of a dying Saturn, especially again, considering that, there's a pretty powerful signature of the death and rebirth of Mercury happening at the exact same time. The Kazemi with Saturn and Mercury, the rebirth happens at exactly the same time. So it's a pretty significant moment for Saturn. But this Saturn, as it ages and dies, has to do with things that have a lot of history behind them and a kind of vastness. One of the things we never get right about Saturn is how mystical the planet is. So regularly do I see, just kind of pop astrology floating around Instagram or what, something like that. People are like, oh, Saturn structures and limits and boundaries. Better to think about Saturn as a gateway. And the gateway between what? Well, let's say, for example, the realm of the planets, because Saturn sits at the edge of the realm of the planets, and the realm beyond, which was connected to the Ade or the Archai, the ideas in the mind of God, the kind of Platonic realm of invisibles and imminent, perfect, shapes and archetypes that form the contents of the mind of the universe. Okay, so Saturn is not just a wall that sits, between you and cool stuff as the voice of conservative tradition or something. It can be that. But remember, Saturn is almost always better understood, especially by people who actually work with Saturn in the psyche, as the threshold or gateway that includes an opening, by the way. It's not just a wall, that includes a threshold that you can cross over between something that's traditional and something that's maybe bucking the trend. We see a lot of that in Aquarius. Something that's very limited and something that transcends limitations, like Capricorn. Capricorn has a lot to do with feeling weighed down by something and working to transcend that which you feel weighs you down. That's a big, huge part of Capricorn. Nobody ever gets that part right, to be totally honest. I mean, and I'm just telling you, like I myself, 4 or 5 years of doing astrology before I even started understanding some of these things. And I credit a lot of that to having good, really good teachers. Not like I'm some genius. It's just you finally figure out that a lot of the cliches, they're just not correct. So anyway, get off my soapbox. All right. So you have thresholds and gateways. Okay. So when you think about a dying Saturn, what you're thinking about is something that involves the crossing over of a threshold between one phase, one era, one age, one maturity level and another, or from death to new life. That threshold is a big one. I keep thinking like, where is our dog? Like, where did she go? She just passed recently and I'm like, where is she? I know that's really weird because, on the level of belief, I'm like, well, she's with Krishna or, she's with the gods or she's with Mother Earth or, there's lots of ideas in my head that I wouldn't be surprised if they were true, and they make me feel good, you know? But I don't know. I don't know. And there's this void. There's this sense of like unknowing, because she crossed over a threshold and I can't see what's beyond that space. Saturn is like that. And Saturn's death is like that in particular, where there's a threshold, there's a letting go, there's a releasing, there's a crossing through some kind of pathway. And sometimes it's very subtle, especially in a double-bodied water sign like Pisces. You just get the feeling that, you know, this might be a little subtler. But this dying Saturn is asking us to keep in mind considerations between things that are known and unknown, that things that can be seen and can't be seen, things that are subtle and things that are gross, distinctions between what is known and what is deeply mysterious to us. And especially that threshold can contain all of those qualities, especially because it's related to a kind of deterioration, a death and a letting go. And it's a mature, kind of deep, emotionally charged, and it's a little bit romantic, you know, a little like a little bit of a dark reverie kind of state that's suggested by Saturn in Pisces. So this kind of transition is at hand. And again, you may notice it only on the level of mind, moods, emotions, thoughts, feelings. You may notice it in some literal area of your life. Look at the horoscopes we did. But these are things that I think dying Saturn has to say. I'm going to tell you what they are, and then we're going to break them down. So what does dying Saturn have to say? What is some of the wisdom philosophically? Now, you may find that there are other things that aren't on this list, right? So this is not guru hour. This is idea hour, you know? So just take it if it works for you. What dying Saturn has to say? Number one, insignificance is key. I want to read you something. This is the etymology of the word significance, which is a huge word in astrology because one of our most famous words is the word signify, which contains in part the word sign. It means of an omen, a dream, from Old French or directly from Latin, meaning a force or an energy that imports, means, or shows something that portends. Expresses, foreshadows, declares, makes known. So a lot of the way we live our life every day, you know, not just, you know, astrologically, of course, but in everyday life, we rely on reality signifying itself to us somewhat clearly, you know, not like perfectly clearly. Our minds can't circumscribe, if you know, eternity, but we rely on life being intelligible, and that there is significance to what's happening, and that we can readily understand that significance. The significance might be only in terms of the flow of mundane events, but often for those of us who are interested in astrology, we're in the habit of looking for significance not only in terms of the logical ordering of things. Why are things happening? How is the best to respond for the sake of peace or happiness or productivity or something like that, or avoidance of disaster? But we also are constantly using signs, omens, symbols, patterns in this language in the sky, this kind of revolving symbolic language in the sky. And we use it as a way of finding, locating, working with significance on multiple levels. What a beautiful thing that we get to participate in. I mean, this is why I do it. This is why my enthusiasm is like it's always being renewed within me, because this language helps me find significance in things by surprise, by accident. Suddenly, it's revelatory. It's beautiful. It's like improvisational music you're participating in without knowing it. It's amazing. However, when Saturn is dying and taking us right to the threshold of this kind of moment, especially, again, think a little bit about the romantic qualities of Pisces. This is the exaltation of Venus and the watery feminine sign of Jupiter. It's a sign of wisdom and romance, and it's a sign of tumultuous feelings. We wrestle with the dark and the light in Pisces as we emerge from winter into spring, zodiacally speaking. So we're at a really interesting threshold. And one of the main things that Saturn teaches us is that there are many times in life where the prevailing mood or atmosphere is one of insignificance. Now, that obviously insignificance would mean a lack of or a kind of canceling out of significance. You cannot find the signs. You can't find the order. Things are not intelligible or clear. And there is a pervading feeling that nothing is standing out. Especially one of the things that significance does for us is because we as souls, when we discover or relate to the world and we find in it significance from very mundane levels to astrological levels, it gives us a feeling of participating in significance, right? When you discover and relate to significance in the world around you, it also grants you a sense that you are a part of the significance. When you can't find it, when you can't locate the significance, then all of a sudden you feel like I'm insignificant. It's very common. We do this all the time. Of course, there are, I think, great practices we can be in, including meditation, prayer, exercise, all different things that we can do to retain a sense of our immutable significance without necessarily having to locate it constantly. We can just use our breath, for example, and the breath itself has this way of saying significant, you know? So it's like, it's not like you have to lose that feeling of being a, but there are relative times, and I know you guys know what I'm talking about, where it's just like, I've lost the plot, you know, and I can't locate myself in a significant universe right now or a significant day. I don't feel significance in my life. But insignificance is actually key. It does a lot of things. It is a valuable ally and one that we lose the blessings of when we curse. So ways to use insignificance that Saturn teaches us, because Saturn is the great negator, right? So if the Saturn is natural opposition of Saturn in the zodiac is to the signs of the sun. Saturn's exalted in Libra, opposite the exaltation of the sun in Aries. Saturn's domicile is Aquarius, natural opposite of Leo, the sun sign. Ancient astrologers wrote vividly about the archetypal opposition between the sun and Saturn. The sun grants illumination. So clearly and intelligibly, the world exists because of the light of the sun. Saturn represents darkness, the negative space, the space that cancels out and brings us into, at worst, ignorance or some kind of experience of faith where we can't see because we're not, the light is not there, and we have to move through some other felt sense of significance. Saturn's also a mystic, remember. So, but Saturn, generally speaking, is associated with the negation of our sense of light, clarity, intelligibility, and significance. So we have the negation of significance as a Saturnian principle. Here's why insignificance is so important. A few reasons anyway. Number one, whenever you're asserting an idea, a claim, or a belief, and there are plenty that are worth having, okay? So I'm not anti-ideas, beliefs, action plans, convictions, but we get them and we lose track of, if we lose track of insignificance in the way that we hold and express the ideas that we believe to be of ultimate value, higher, better, more noble, more virtuous, more important, more urgent than any others. If we forget insignificance, if we don't have some little thread of psychic connection to spaces in our lives where the pervading feeling or atmosphere has been one of insignificance, then we will become jerks. That's the basic idea. And this is not my idea, right? I'm presenting things that I have read from the yogic tradition, from especially the Taoist tradition, the I Ching, the Tao Te Ching, the Stoic tradition, so many contemplatives that have said the same things from different traditions all over the world. What to speak of traditions that don't even have to say it. You just observe that silence plays a huge role in the overall ethos of the people. I remember when I was in the Amazon drinking ayahuasca and I sat with curanderos who, you know, lived in the jungle for the first time, and I observed how much of the day, a lot of the day that was spent just being quiet, sometimes working, sometimes going about, you know, just daily stuff, but just quiet. One of the things that happens in the quiet is everything In quiet, there's a weird way in which if you really embrace quiet and open yourself up to it, everything becomes of equal significance. The birds, the thoughts, the emotions, the feeling, everything's just streaming along like a river. And you're not scooping a cup out to grab some significance. And so in a way, insignificance is just flowing. And insignificance has this incredible way of leveling things out, of taking away the tendency to subjectively privilege. So that's important, because when we are asserting our political ideas or beliefs, which are not unimportant, right? They play a role in the Tao and the unfolding of the Tao in the world. And we're here to live lives on the stage, you know? So we're not here to just transcend the world and check out of it through some kind of, you know, meme about insignificance. But you have to keep a connection to it. It's really important, because when people hear someone asserting a powerful idea, a claim, or a belief, and the platform is coming from self-righteousness, this idea grants me more significance than other human beings. This stance, this moral or the moral indignation that I feel, or whatever I think is repugnant, or whatever I think needs to be done better, or whatever I'm fighting for, or whatever I think is most valuable or important, you can hear it in someone when they're coming from a space that, you know, this idea, this claim, this belief grants me greater significance. Somehow it's irritating to us. We sense within it the seeds of eventual destruction. You know, you can just feel it. And I can only reflect on that because I can notice it in myself. And I'm sure you can too, if we're being really honest. But when you hear someone they could be using any kind of voice. It doesn't have to be a quiet voice. It could be a very powerful voice. Still, there's like a fiber in there that goes all the way down from the beaming radiance of the sun that might be coming up on the top, but you can hear it hitting the roots of Saturn in the bottom, you know? And that the roots of Saturn in the bottom of their voice are saying something like, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, nothing is more significant than anything else, because signification, something portending meaning, importance, something flashing, a bird's wing that appears and speaks a message. In the grand scheme of things, all of that comes up out of insignificance, the negative space. It comes out of the silence. It comes out of the space where nothing means anything more than anything else, which is really, really hard for us to imagine, because we are people that have a hard time holding the presence of opposites. Saturn is the ruler of opposites. Saturn is the ruler of the opposition. And as the threshold or boundary keeper between what we see and what's beyond what we see, what is significant and what is insignificant, these kinds of dualities, Saturn rules them. If we can't learn to hold the tension of those opposites, then we're in trouble, because, you know, all of the great mystical traditions tell us that it is the ability to hold the tension of the opposites that is most effective in being in the world and in the process of enlightenment. But anyway, before we walk off some kind of cliff here with that, when asserting an idea, a claim, or belief, one of the reasons you guys know that I backed away from having anything really to say with the astrology and political events is because I would always get this, and it doesn't matter, well-intending people, believe me, well-intending people and, you know, maybe some jerky people, but it would always be like, I can't believe that you're talking about this when this transit could be or ought to be talking about that. This is more important. This is the thing you should be talking about, right? Like, and you know, mostly for my own sanity, I just like started just redirecting I didn't ever include much about politics, but I just started redirecting things, for my own well-being. You know, in that kind of thinking is actually really common, and it's not, I understand it. I don't even like, I'm not trying to judge it, because I think it's a very natural part of being like earthly citizens who see that there are things of great importance happening, and we can't help but be more called or drawn to one level of importance over another, because, you know, we're here to participate and our participation will vary. It'd be very diverse. Some people are going to be really, you know, super excited about one thing that's very important that's happening, a lot of convictions and beliefs. And so, but here's the thing, my best friends throughout life, as I've evolved and grown and worked through some of these things that we're talking about, at least within myself, I continue to work on them. I am drawn to people who they might have a very, very wide different variety of beliefs, ideas, claims, things that stand out that are of greater significance. But I find that I am most at home with people who underneath it understand that it somehow this significance pops out of the river of insignificance, which means that they that there's a humility. There's just an unknowing that's present. People have very, like me, I'll give you an example of mine. I have very strong beliefs and ideas when it comes to astrology as a form of divination, not a science. That's like definitely one of my soapboxes. You guys have heard me rant about it a million times. But here's the thing is that I over and over again, when anything like that or any other part of my life has gotten so intense that it becomes, it becomes a platform for ego, for self-righteousness, which you can start to feel, you know, it starts developing like that. Something will happen that will bring me back to my own insignificance, and something will bring me back to the insignificance of these ideas or little platforms in comparison to the overwhelming, sublime presence of reality, which is in part a river of insignificance, so significant that it's just insignificant, right? It's a paradox, but that's what it is. And when you're in touch with that, and then you speak to your ideas, claims, or beliefs, you're either tolerable or you're actually compelling. There's that kind of humility is very, very important. And Saturn teaches that. The insignificance is key, especially when asserting ideas, claims, or beliefs. When judging or offering advice or criticism, solicited or unsolicited, can you remember, can I remember, can we remember that the significance of our thoughts, our opinions, our ideas, our advice or critique or criticism, whether asked for or not, is ultimately also at the exact same time that it may play a very significant role in some situation, also insignificant. Holding that tension does not negate what you have to say. It deepens what you have to say. You know, you're just... In a sense, what it does is it just hedges certainty. It heads the ego off at the pass and says, here's my best ideas. Here's the conviction I have behind them. And and I'm just a little speck of toot floating in the galaxy, you know. I am insignificant, and so I'm not going to pretend like I'm coming from a place that is firmer than it is, more solid than it is. It's amazing how I remember quite frequently when I was in ayahuasca ceremonies, I participated in a group from Brazil, and there was the ceremonies were held in a way where you were in these kind of like dancing lines. It was called the Santo Daime. And, you know, you would stand through the duration of the service, often dancing, and, it was very beautiful, but also I was used to coming. I was coming from ayahuasca ceremonies in South America, where you know you were laying on a mat for the night, and this is like a totally different kind of setting. And I remember how difficult it was for me to figure out how to stand and be like coherent for the duration of these ceremonies. And I had this, you know, very powerful insight that there was voices in me that were like, "You can't do this. This is too hard." I blah blah blah. And you know, all the sort of fatigued, stressed, doubtful, worried, tired voices that would come up. I noticed sometimes this happens at the gym too, to be totally honest, like during cardio or something. It's like, oh, I can't do this. And I remember that there's just this little like teacherly voice that, you know, I thank the plant medicine for. And it came in and it just said, stay very close to those voices. Don't try to get them to go away. Don't try to dominate them. Actually, if you just allow them to speak, don't judge them, just let them speak, their uncertainties are a kind of firmness. And you'll find that if you just allow them to be there, that those uncertainties and doubts about your ability to like stand here in this space while on this very powerful entheogen will actually provide you for firmness firmness. And I was like, you know, just blown away by that. And so it's true. Like any time that from that point forward, after I had that little insight, that I would hear those voices like, you can't stand this whole time. You can't sing and dance this whole time. You know, you need to be barfing on the floor, laying down or something. It's funny because I would just kind of hear those voices. I would hear them and just let them grow stronger and more fanatical in my head. And I wouldn't try to prohibit them at all. And those doubts became like a kind of fiber. It's like the branch of a little sapling, like getting strong or thick in the middle. Amazing. Amazing. So it's very important that when we judge or being asked to judge something, to make a to have a discernment or to be discriminating or to offer advice, whether it's solicited or God, you know, I don't like unsolicited advice, but let's just say you find yourself in the position of offering some advice, maybe to your kids or something. Can it come from a space within you where you can almost hear, I don't know more than anyone else. I'm not more special. My thoughts are not more significant than anything else. And in fact, there might be many other more significant, accurate, appropriate things to say. Saturn is really, really good at helping us remember that space of insignificance. And when listening, gosh, if you can listen with insignificance in mind, that's really powerful. You know, then you can, when you're listening, you can, oh, that's interesting that voice came up. There's this sound, there's that feeling, and I'm not going to grant any greater significance to anything. And in that sense, it's not that nothing is significant. It's that you're allowing insignificance room to breathe, room to be a phenomenon itself. Being in touch with that is very, very important. So anyway, these are three things that Saturn has to say about insignificance. Number two, dying Saturn has to say to us, keep eternity in mind. What does that mean? Well, here's how we keep eternity in mind. Number one, this has meaning around me, no more or less than anything else. It's a great practice to be in. We frequently think, and again, this goes back to something like significance, but a different way of thinking about insignificance is to think about eternity, which is just a different way of framing things, really. In the scope of eternity, if you think nothing has an ultimate beginning, nothing has an ultimate end, everything has always been, there is ultimately nothing at stake whatsoever in the grand scheme of things. There are temporary experiences that are heavenly and hellish. Movement persists, change, dynamism persists, creativity persists, participation persists. Everything is sacred, everything is meaningful, everything is included. Okay, if you can keep that in mind, which I know is not like, if you went around like that, it could give you room to think that you're not supposed to be a citizen of Earth, participating in stories and living a life and relating. But you don't want to hold it that intensely, like you become some sort of white knuckled, eternity boss lord. you know what I mean. But if you can look around and just sometimes just repeat, this is meaningful, but no more or less than anything else. And then the next thing that comes up and shows itself of significance, this is meaningful, no more or less than anything else. And the reason that we do that is to remember that in eternity, everything is teeming with meaning. So another way of talking about insignificance, rather, because some people may not like that word, they may feel that it threatens their significance, right? Another way of framing it, if that triggers you, is to think about eternity. This has meaning, no more or less. This is sacred, no more or less than anything else. This is included, no more or less than anything else. Those are not easy things to do. They may not be appropriate things to say to yourself or to speak out loud to someone else all of the time, but keeping some kind of loose cord connection to these ideas, which are reflections of the reality of eternity. What do you do with eternity? Nothing, because it's teeming with things to do, with things that have been done, with things that are meaningful, with things that are sacred. Nothing is excluded. So, you know, keeping those things in mind is such a good thing to do when Saturn is dying, because we're crossing over some kind of threshold and we're tempted to think, oh my God, I'm really losing something, right? And it's like, well, how do I mourn or grieve or let go while also keeping eternity in mind? How do I mourn or grieve or let go of something that has been significant while keeping insignificance in mind? These are not easy things to do. These are some of the hardest things to do, which is why Saturn is often talked about as so hard. Anyway, so another way of framing some of the same things that we just said about insignificance come from just thinking about keeping eternity in mind, if you prefer that to insignificance. And number three is stay close to questions that don't have answers. I love Mary Oliver. My wife loves Mary Oliver. She's a poet. She once said, she was interviewed, and Ashley was telling me about this, so I'm just regurgitating what Ashley told me that she was listening to on like a podcast with Mary Oliver, or she was interviewed at one point. Anyway, she said, you know, the interviewer was saying, I read your poems and you bring me to these places where you ask these questions and I just have no answers for them. And I find that those are some of my favorite places in your poetry. She goes, good, good. She said, every day we are used to, and I'm just paraphrasing Ashley's paraphrase. I know that Mary Oliver said something like this. I had to read a boatload of her in grad school in my creative writing program. And Ashley and I read her almost every morning. So she said, every day we're used to dealing mostly with questions that have answers, like mundane problems that have to be solved. So they're questions and answers that we deal with. We don't realize what vast treasure is available to us in the daily problems or questions that come up and the answers or solutions that we have to find by means of keeping in touch with questions that don't have answers or that we cannot find the answer to. So you got to figure out what to do because the dog's got an upset stomach. You got to figure out what to do because your kid's home from school sick and you have to work. And what do you do? There's lots of stuff that comes up in everyday life. A lot of what we deal in quite regularly as, you know, we sleep like a third of our lives, right? So if you think about the amount of mundane time that you spend doing dishes, doing laundry, cleaning up, showering, brushing your teeth, sleeping, a lot of life is spent doing pretty mundane things. And a lot of daily life is spent looking at very mundane issues and solutions to those issues. And, you know, it's life. It's fun. It's part of life. Think what Mary Oliver is saying is there's more available to us in the daily mundane events of life if we have something that allows us to see the mundane for more than just the mundane. And one of the things that does that are questions that don't have easy answers. Questions that go so deep that we just go, yeah, I don't know. Where is my dog? Where did she go? I don't know, man. I don't know. I have faith. I believe in God. I believe in divinity. I believe in my dog's soul, you know, but I don't know where she is. That's the honest truth. And I really appreciate one of the things I love about my wife more than I could possibly explain is that she is someone since I met her that I can sit down with at night on the couch after the kids are in bed and she will go, where is Rhea? And I go, I don't know. And we'll just sit there, sometimes 5-10 minutes. We'll just sit there with a big question. She loves doing that. I've always loved doing that. I love friends that do that. I love people that do that because it's so obnoxious to me personally. This is just me being sort of honest. It's so obnoxious being around people that always have to have a flippant answer for everything. You know, always know something. I like not knowing things. I like not knowing things because it's there's something satisfying about it. There's something beautiful about it. And so that being said, I do like having people around that know where to go and what to do. It's good to have answers too, you know, but yeah, it's like Mary Oliver saying like, stay close to eternity is a similar way of saying when you stay close to questions like, where is my dog that died? Rather than being like, well, she's in the Akashic record floating around with Deepak Chopra and I'm absolutely sure of it because I've got 17 crystals on my altar, you know? I know because I took Course in Miracles. You know, it's like, I don't know where she is. I don't know. There's so many big questions. We can find a big question or two a week that just opens our hearts, opens our minds, creates that expansiveness. And we feel like we're staring out, you know, like one of those one of those science fiction movies where they open the hatch and the person's just like floating out in space. Stay close to questions that don't have answers. Stay close to questions that don't have answers. When you do that, how can you do that? Number one, keep in mind when making claims or statements, right, that there are many questions out there that you don't have answers to, many problems that can't be solved. Because at the very least, what that does is it keeps us somewhat humble when we're faced with questions and everyday problems. We might be able to, you know, like there's sometimes when, you know, my daughter comes home and she'll go, this person did this and blah, 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 why? And I'll just go, man, that's really hard. I just don't know why people do that sometimes. And I'll see it like, and I swear to God, it doesn't work all the time, right? But once in a while on my daughter's face, we'll just go, like the problem will leave and she'll be like, infinity? You know, sometimes that's really relieving. I have to keep that in mind when I'm facing problems about the groceries. Like, well, shit, infinity. So keep in mind when making claims or statements that there are so many problems that don't need or have solutions, so many questions that don't need or have answers. That too exists. The threshold of a dying Saturn brings us close to spaces that don't need answering, that there's insignificance, there's eternity, there's questions that don't have answers that just take us out the hatch floating into a kind of space. It's not going to be there forever. Don't freak out. Two, be excited by the process of discovery. Like one of the things that staying close to answers that don't, questions that don't have answers does for us is to say, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But I bet you if we just keep following, pulling the thread, we'll find out. A lot of the times, it's not that questions never have answers, it's that they don't have one right now. Dying Saturn is really good at saying, look, when you're faced with insignificance, when you're faced with a threshold, when you're faced with death, uncertainty, letting go, releasing, you don't know what comes next, don't force it. Let your questions and problems be things that right now don't have answers or solutions. And be excited, because maybe if you stay curious, you'll find something. Care more about souls than about being right. If you care more about the living things around you, including yourself, and tending to them with care and devotion and tenderness, embodied tenderness, you can't go wrong. It's like a cheat code. Ashley says, care for the living things first. If we have stuff that comes up and we don't have an answer, we don't have a solution, we feel like we're in some kind of purgatory, you know, some space of unknowing or uncertainty, deterioration, death, crossing over a threshold, we don't know what comes next. We're faced with a lot of questions. We don't have answers to them. In that moment, care more about loving than about knowing. And that's a good guideline for us, like all the time, right? Like before you go and tell someone what they ought to think or feel, what news events ought to be the most important to them right now, or what platform is the most virtuous or whatever. It's like, can you keep in mind that there is insignificance, eternity abounds, questions that don't have answers are living and moving all around us, like clouds moving in the sky. And I can just care more about souls than about being right or knowing or answering. Right. These are the kinds of things that old dying Saturn, you think of Saturn, oh, you know, like Saturn is a boundary and a limit structure and blah, 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 blah. Saturn is also a very mystical planet that takes us out of knowing to unknowing, that takes us out of certainty to uncertainty, that takes us out of significance to insignificance, that takes us out of time and into eternity. Keep those things in mind. They're actually here to help. So I hope that this little sermon from the stars today was useful for you and inspiring of your own thoughts and your own ideas, because I don't know shit, you know, just reporting on what I've heard about Saturn. All right. That's what I've got for today. Hope you guys have a good one, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye.